Blog Talk Radio.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful. What is a fruit? A fruit is the best. He is constantly training and conditioning himself to meet and overcome all obstacles in his path. His sole purpose is to help to deliver the 17 million or more dead to the Lamb of God, the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, through the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan Muhammad. To do this, he is compelled to be obedient, tolerant, militant, courteous, humble, honest, dependable. A fruit is obedient to the laws of Islam and those in authority. His conduct is militant. He is humble and submissive. He is tolerant and understanding. He is courteous and respectful. He is honest in thoughts, deeds, and actions. He is alert and dependable.
Assalamu alaikum. You are out on the front line with the fruit of Islam. I am your host, Jihad Muhammad, from Atlanta, Georgia. Our topic tonight, how to build unity through diversity of the original nation in North America. With a failing political and economic system, is it time for the black, the brown, and Native Americans to form a strategic alliance? And if so, what should that alliance look like? And is it possible at this time in history? What say you? Tonight, at the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks with long-standing hip-hop artist and activist, Sister Yonasta Longwolf Hill is in queue tonight. Also, at the Farrakhan Speaks Roundtable Talks with Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, the director of the Nation Building Network. Also, Student Minister Abel Muhammad of Mas Mariam, Student Assistant Minister Tony Muhammad of Miami, Florida, and Student Minister David Muhammad out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin. They are all here to discuss closing the gap on division and using our diversity to our advantage as we all try to unite to build and do something for ourselves. Also, we will take an overview look at the timely message, the series, The Time, and What Must Be Done, parts 1 through 14. Then we will close it out tonight with our boots on the ground. We will salute some of the cities with the fruit of Islam who are responding to the call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan across America. So sit back, get your comments ready, get your questions ready, flood the lines, relax, buckle up, let's ride. In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, and I bear witness that Muhammad is his servant. I'd like to greet the listening audience tonight, wherever you are, listening by internet or by phone, with the greetings of peace, of assalamu alaikum. We have a very, very, very special show tonight, and it's time to create the dialogue. I want to give a special shout-out to Sister Waleska, Heaven X, who this is her brainchild, this show right here. She helped to produce the show. And we thank her very much for the information and everything that she did to put this show together. So shout out, Sister Waleska, from Compton, Muhammad Smiles 54. We also want to give a shout out to our sister, Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, for always being here in support. But tonight she's here as a guest. With the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, she has a lot to offer to this conversation. It just wouldn't be the same without her. And we salute her for being on the show. And, of course, our engineer tonight, Brother Rafi Muhammad, has got my back. He's taking care of business on the board. So you all got any questions or comments, you press 1. Our brother will acknowledge you and let me know that you're there. Meanwhile, let's get the show started. Let me start out by saying to our sister who is in Phoenix, Arizona right now, our sister Yonasta Longwolf Hill. Assalamu alaikum, beloved.
Wa alaikum salam, family.
How are you tonight?
Thank you for having me on. I'm doing wonderful. I'm doing wonderful. It's beautiful out here in this 80-degree weather.
I'm on my way. I'm on my way. Yes, ma'am. What you got going on these days? What's happening with you?
Well, I am right now getting ready for the Gathering of Nations powwow that is coming up the weekend of the April 26th to the 28th. It's the last weekend of April. It's the huge Gathering of Nations powwow. I support every single year. The owners they happen to be really the friend of mine. As a matter of fact, it's an African American black man that does it.
Okay.
That has been putting together the Gathering of Nations powwow for over 20 years, and it's turned into the Native American version of Savior's Day. I mean, it's a huge powwow for 3 days, and they have the Miss Indian pageant, the Miss Indian World pageant, where it's indigenous women from all over the world that come and compete to be Miss Indian World. And our Savior's Day of 2009, I believe, I had Megan, she was the former Miss Indian World, I had her speak at our Savior's Day alongside with Immortal Technique and Red Cloud right before the minister spoke. And so we have, in the nation, we have embraced her and brought her to our Savior's Day in the past. And so just the whole brand of Miss Indian World is very alongside the teachings of MGT, the way that they dress and cook. And, I mean, everything is all in that same realm of how to be a virtuous woman.
And wow.
So that's something that I always support and be involved in, and that's what they do that on Friday. And then Saturday and Sunday, it's just a powwow. City Minister Ishmael Muhammad was asked before in 2000, and I believe it was 2008, they invited him to be the keynote speaker right before Grand Entry, which is really huge. And so he spoke at Grand Entry 1 year, and So I urge everyone to go to gatheringofnations.com and to be involved and go and bring your family. It's the your eat. I actually had Student Minister Ishmael eat a buffalo burger. It was authentic buffalo. It's the cleanest meat. So you know, and as well as fried bread, and you have all the jewelry and everything that you get. That's all indigenous from all over the world. So it's a huge, huge event, and it's something that I always urge everyone to go if you want to connect with our Native American brothers and sisters all around the world, because that's where they attend this huge powwow.
And so, this is in Phoenix?
No, it's in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Oh, Albuquerque. Wow, okay.
Yeah.
That's right. That is every year. That's right. I'm familiar with that one. I thought you was talking about one in Phoenix, but I'm familiar with the one in Albuquerque. That's correct. Okay.
Yeah, it's an 8-hour drive from me and from Phoenix, but and I love that drive because I get to drive through the Navajo Nation and all of the
love
other
it, yes.
reservations and four corners. Yeah, it's just beautiful.
Right.
I stayed
at Fort Defiance myself a few times back in 2007.
Okay.
Yeah, very familiar with the. Oh, yeah. I love the Navajo Nation. Love it, love it.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. Well, thank you for being on the show, and we're going to get ready to get started. And if there's anything else, any other announcements you wish to make during the time, please let us know, and we'll definitely get those in. I see you doing big things. I see you got a new CD out.
Oh yeah, you know what? I did it 2 years ago.
Okay.
Right before I had my son, and I didn't really get a chance to really officially put it out, and I didn't really get a chance to really put it out. So I just put it out basically 3-4 days ago. So it's on iTunes. And,
right,
it's
that's
called
right.
All Hail the Queen. It's called All Hail the Queen Party Tape. And
right.
I just wanted to do a mixtape, kind of like a party tape, where you like an old school mixtape where you could just put it, put in some music and let it rock and entertain, barbecue, family reunions, whatever. And it's
right.
just a really fun music. So you could get it on iTunes. It's called All Hail the Queen. It's Queen Yanajaha. And so I have that. I'm also me and my husband. We have merchandise that we are selling right now on kingsandqueensllc.com. That's with the Z and the letter N, llc.com. So everything Queen Yanajaha, everything Capadonna. Where you could go online and support what we're doing.
Beautiful, beautiful, Sister Queen.
On my book, so that should be coming sometime before 2014.
Oh, we got to keep you up. We got to keep up on that one then. Definitely. Okay. Sister Queen Aziza Mariam, assalamu alaikum, ma'am.
Wa alaikum salam, Brother Jihad, and to all of the distinguished panelists, and of course to our dear brother and friend, Brother Rafi, and of course to the listening audience. Assalamu alaikum and good evening.
Wa alaikum salam. We're doing wonderful, beloved. I'm glad you had time out of your busy schedule. This is the protocol director of this network that everyone is on and that you're listening to. She's responsible for all the shows that come on this network, and she works 8 days a week. 8 days a week. It's only 7 in the week, but she finds a way to make 8 out of it. And that sister worked hard. And thank you, beloved, for being on with us tonight. I know you have a lot to share with us. As our brother, student minister Abel Muhammad of Muhammad's Mosque Maryam in Chicago. Is he on the line?
Yes, sir, dear brother. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam. You've been very busy, sir.
Trying to keep up with the man who's setting the pace for the time that we're in.
Brother, you are a great helper to him because you're always on the move. You got an event that's coming up this Saturday. Can you tell us a little bit about this event, the first annual sacred run of the Four Directions in Chicago?
Yes, sir. This is actually an event that is an ancient event for the indigenous people, and they've been doing it several years now in California. At the organization called the Harmony Keepers, which is a group of indigenous brothers and sisters that work with other black and indigenous groups to bring and promote peace amongst our people. And what it is it's literally 4 marathons.
Uh-oh, did he jump again? I think it's that phone he got.
Yes, sir, we just dropped him for a moment.
Okay, that's okay. All right. Is Student Assistant Minister Tony Muhammad on the line?
He is on the line. Assalamu alaikum, dear brother.
Wa alaikum salam, dear brother. How are you tonight?
Oh, I'm wonderful and even better now that I hear your voice. And to
oh, praise
the
to Allah.
We did hear Brother Abel, but
you know how he do. Yeah. He'll be back. We're going to hold his seat on the panel. He'll be right back. Student Minister David Muhammad, assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, sir. Can y'all hear me all right?
Oh, we can hear you just fine. How are you, dear brother?
I'm fine. Just a quick correction. I'm a student in the ministry, but I am not student minister out of Milwaukee.
I know you're not the minister of the mosque, but you aren't a student minister, though? Or your assistant minister?
Student assistant and also student protocol director.
Okay, beautiful. We want to make sure we get that correct. All right. Well, we want to get going with this topic tonight. Our topic tonight for the listening audience, we're dealing with black indigenous diversity and how we can use our diversity to create unity. But to really get a broad understanding of how this is even possible, I think it's very what we really need to do is discuss what are the differences, what are the concerns that we have with all of the different communities of the original nation in North America. Sister Yanajaha, I want to start with you. What are some of the challenges that our Native brothers and sisters face on a daily basis that you see needs immediate attention?
I believe it's a lot of the same problems that we have in the urban communities, that Willie Lynch syndrome has spread on such a wide scale that has got to the Native American community, because they too was Willie Lynched in a way. So with the mentality of staying on reservations and being confined and, you know, and then having to deal with low self-esteem, suicide and alcoholism and drug abuse is the number one killer amongst Native American communities, as well as diabetes. So it's the food that is the poor quality of food that is given to them, as well as the lack of resources for agriculture. Even though they have knowledge, it's just the fact of the lack of resources that has been provided, where they have brainwashed Native Americans all across the country, all across the world, of basically having to depend on white America to for their food, shelter, and their clothing. And so it was set up, it was skilled, deceitfully skilled that way and taught that way, and for that reason, you know, that's the number one killer. And at the rate that they're going, a lot of tribes are becoming extinct because of the fact of diabetes, suicide, alcoholism, and drug abuse. So those are the main things, epidemics that are happening in Native American communities.
Okay. Now, the reservations, do they fall under federal charter like territory or like Puerto Rico or St. Thomas? Or what is actually that whole law status that they fall under?
Can you repeat the question?
Like the reservations, do they fall under the federal guidelines as being a territory, like, say, Puerto Rico, St. Thomas, Virgin Islands? Or what is the status of the reservation by law? I know it's not like where we live in an independent state or whatever, or in a state or whatever, but what is the reservations? What charter does that fall under? Do you know?
Their own sovereignty. What happened was that every land that was basically when the government came and when the white man came and took America, they gave Native Americans little plots of land and said that this is your land, you run your own government, you do this is your land, you live off of it. But the problem with that is that a lot of the land that many tribes were given, they were given the poorest part of the land, of the soil. So they was like, let's say you was living in a place that cultivates by water, and so you're able to have water with salmon and fish and all of that. But then the government told these Native Americans, no, we're going to put you in the desert. And so try to live off of that. And so it was, so, and that's your land. So a lot of the land was, all the land today is all sovereign land, and it has been broken up by a lot of various treaties. And so then when what happened was a lot of the land that they're on, they didn't know how to live off the land anymore. And a lot of the tribes didn't know how to live off the land anymore, so they had no choice but to put their hand out to the government and say, you know what, can you give us some food? Can you give us some shelter? Can you give us some, you know, some clothing? Because we can't go to the buffalo where the buffalo was at, because the buffalo doesn't graze over here. We can't go to the water where the salmon is at, because you put us in the desert. You know, I mean, they set it up so they could go to the government. So they started a government called the BIA, which is the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which is part of the federal government. And they went to this government, and now today they depend on the BIA, which is still the government, but they're all free. They're all on free land. But they depend so solely on the government, but they're all on free sovereign land.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, beloved. Brother David, are you there, sir?
Yes, sir, I am.
brother, can you talk to us about the same thing, some of the concerns that you may see? Your background is basically Puerto Rican or what?
My background is from Puerto Rico.
Okay.
And, you know, what Sister Yanazdaha just referenced is very similar. And if you look at in terms of what they call Hispanic people in general, we suffer from high rates of depression, and suicide, and obesity, and diabetes. But Puerto Rico is, you mentioned territory, and that's its legal name, just like
right.
our legal state is as a citizen, quote-unquote.
Right.
But it's really a colony of the United States. One of the things the minister referenced in the last episode of The Time of What Must Be Done is how it was taken in the Spanish-American War in 1898 through a false flag incident. And so the people of Puerto Rico were fighting for their own independence. And at that time, they welcomed the United States in as assistance in liberating the island. But what they got was much worse than what they had under Spain. And what we've had is the last 100-plus years of U.S. domination, where the United States uses Puerto Rico as a military base, as an experimental hub, where they experiment on the people, and where the masses of the people have either fled to the mainland U.S. looking for work to become second-class citizens here in this country, or to stay in Puerto Rico, and it's called Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico means rich port. In 2013, it is one of the biggest drug ports for the United States right now, and it has the highest murder rate in the Caribbean, higher than Jamaica, higher than some of the other islands. And it's because of the influx of the drug trade that is funneling into the east border or the eastern seaboard. So Puerto Rico is the slave of the Caribbean. And that's why there is no accident when you see much of our history and our legacy. We have kinship with the black man here in America because that's our history as well as with the indigenous because that's our history as well also.
Right. Beautiful, beautiful. Is Brother Abel back on the line?
Yes, sir, dear brother. I'm not sure what happened there. I could see that I was on the line on my phone, but I couldn't hear anything.
Okay. We're dealing with Brother Abel some of the concerns that we have with our different brothers and sisters from the different ethnic nations. Can you give us something, brother? Talk to us about the major concerns that you see with the Mexican brothers and sisters in America or in Mexico?
Yes, sir. I mean, you can tell, and I was listening to Sister Yanazdaha and Brother David. It's, again, a very similar situation. Although Mexico is considered an independent nation, in the last 20 years since the implementation of NAFTA, what has happened to Mexico when it's lost of agricultural jobs and even machinery-type jobs, where it has become a direct cheap outsourcing for American jobs, but it is also, due to that same NAFTA agreement, opened the doors to what is called illegal immigration, which has, of course, has been in the news so much in the last few days here. They have allowed and created a condition in Mexico where it is no longer a hospitable place for the majority of people who live there, where once when you were a farmer, you could make enough money from what you grew under your feet and owned and was given to you by your father and grandfather to produce for your family and in enough of abundance to then sell off the excess to others and then trade and create a living for yourself due to the transnational corporations that were allowed to go into Mexico. It did two things. It crushed the economy of Mexico, which then forced the people living there to come to America, either living in third world conditions in their own country or be forced to come here and live as second and third class citizens in a country that is no longer ours, although it was at one time great portions of it. So it's a very difficult circumstance that most of the Mexican people find ourselves in because we are, A, either displaced, B, totally disconnected, or C, totally at a loss as of what to do and are just trying to survive. And many of those same health conditions that exist on the reservations, they exist within the Mexican community in terms of the lack of proper health, lack of proper education, lack of proper housing. The same way that they experimented on our brothers in Puerto Rico and other parts of the Caribbean, they attempt to do that on the reservations as well as with the so-called undocumented Mexican and Central American brothers and sisters who come here. So what we're looking at is a move by the government of the United States and its corporate allies and funders and those who make the policies of America to undermine all of the darker people in this hemisphere. They have no, and it's not by accident. What are the chances that those people who are black and brown skinned in the Caribbean, those who are black and brown skinned south of the border of the United States, those who are black and brown skinned within the borders of the United States, we're all suffering the same types of horrific health conditions, the same type of miseducation, the same type of disorganization and disunity that cannot be by accident when before the Caucasian came here, all of our people were thriving on some level or another. We were developed and performing at a highly civilized level, building structures which still mystify people to this day. So we have to look and see what has happened and what can we do today. Once we know what has happened to our people, what are we going to do today to fix the condition? Because we can't expect the same people who implemented these policies that hurt all of our people to now be the same ones to heal our people. That would be foolish of us to think that the ones who caused the problem would be now so wonderful to come and fix the problem.
Praise be to Allah. Sister Queen Aziza, I see some relativity here between the black man and woman of America and what we're talking about tonight. What say you?
Well, you know, Brother Jihad, I'm listening to everyone and, you know, such wonderful input. But let's talk about diversity for a moment, if you don't mind. You know, when we look at, you know, each other, we have been taught and we have been trained to focus on our differences. But I think that if we begin to study the things that we have in common, that would diminish a lot of the differences that they say that we have. Because, you know, you have to look at the teacher. And you have to look at the history of the one that is providing the information, because they have hyped up everything. The division amongst people of color, original people, it's really kind of blown out of proportion, because when we meet and greet one another, it's not such a great diversity. But those of us that are caught up in a culture, that are caught up in an educational system that is telling us that, you know, when they got here, the Native Americans were savage. And, you know, everywhere they go, you know, everyone is savage. And they have to go there and they have to create, you know, policy and democracy and things of that nature. But we know by evidence that everywhere that he, being devil, has gone, there has been chaos and destruction. So for us, the original and indigenous people of this country in particularly, that have all suffered under the same oppressor, you know, we have to look at the things that we have in common. My people in particularly come from Africa. Well, you know, there's this big rumor that Africans don't like black Americans. However, you have to understand what level of communication has Africa had with black Americans. You know, before they come over here and get visas to go to school, we are depicted like boys in the hood. And so they're coming out of those villages and towns, you know, coming to America seeking opportunity, and all they have ever seen of us hanging on the corner and shooting up each other in the street, and they see us on BET, and they're saying, you know, wow, what a waste of opportunity in the land of the free. And then when they get here, is different. So even in how we are demographically separated, you know, there's a Mexican neighborhood, and then the black community is called the hood, and then the white folks, they don't in the suburbs, and, you know, that's craziness, but that's not by accident. But when we meet one another in the street or in a common place or in the mall or in the restaurant, there's no diversity. So we have to first start educating ourselves about one another, and we have to first educate ourselves about the one who is so-called educating us about everybody else.
Right.
Let's examine his history and see what he has done to create this diversity. And first, that's how we begin to turn it around, by education and understanding, because we have more in common than we ever have differences.
Yes, ma'am. And I was going to get to that point. That was the next phase of the roundtable. We were going to talk about some of the things that we can do. But I thought it was first, what we needed to know is, what do we all, I asked everybody to start off on the difficulties of what we face every day, because I want the listening audience to see just what we have in common. That's why I started the yes, that's right. That's why I started the topic off with the difficulties that we all face. And if you listen to Sister Yonasta, on down to Brother Abel, Brother David, and then we get ready to talk to Brother Tony, who has another part of the equation. We want to show the listening audience just really the diversity, just what's really going on here. We all suffering from the same thing. See, I grew up thinking that the black man this and the black man that, and I was neglecting of my other brothers and sisters who had struggles before the black men even came to the shores of North America. But that was my growth. And following now the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who has expanded his breast, I've learned to follow behind him and expand my breast as well. But that's the only reason why we started this way, beloved. But I want to get your brother. Yes, ma'am. I want to get your brother Tony real quick. Assalamu alaikum, sir.
Wa alaikum salam, dear brother.
Now, Brother Tony, you down in Miami, and you have so many different dialects down there. What say you? What's going on in Miami, the differences of what's happening down there?
Well,
and
in
being
Miami,
being of Cuban descent brings a whole another spectrum to it as well.
Yes, sir. Well, there's so much diversity here in South Florida, but when we're speaking about Miami, this is the 7th regional headquarters of the Nation of Islam, so we cater to so many different cultures, and the way that we treat one another here in the 7th Regional Headquarters is just a reflection of how we're treating each other, or really as the standard bearers in the Nation of Islam, it should correspond to how we should be treating one another, and we should be emulating that example in the way that we treat one another when we're dealing with diversity. Diversity is not an adversity.
Right.
Dealing specifically with Cuba, as my parents are Cuban, you do find a history of colonialism there also. As Cuba presently is under, since the Kennedy administration back, I believe it was in 1962, has gotten more severe since then, and recently with the Obama administration, they've loosened sanctions on travel quite a bit. However, it's been in a state of colonialism still, as a sign of, if you're going to be against or show any kind of displeasure towards the United States, at least that's the way that they're presenting it, then this is what we're going to do to you, not allowing or discouraging other nations in the world to do trade with Cuba, disallowing them to do trade with Cuba. And explains why Cuba is in such a poverty-stricken state today, but yet and still that government continues to work hard and live very strongly, really, as they seek alternative ways of providing medical care to our people there on the island and really all over the world, because Fidel Castro has been trained, by way of the medical schools there in Cuba, has been training doctors to travel all over the world and provide care to people all over the world whenever there's some kind of catastrophe that takes place anywhere, whether it be an earthquake or any kind of tragedy. Fidel Castro sends doctors to help. But at the root of it, Cuba is in the condition that it is today because of the United States, using it as a sign that if you're going to get out of line with U.S. policy, U.S. policy to allow U.S. corporations to come into these countries and exploit the people, as it was taking place under the Fulgencio Batista presidency and prior to that, then if you're not going to allow the United States to go in there, it's U.S. corporations to go in there and exploit the people, then this is what we're going to do to you. Fidel Castro nationalized many of the companies, many of the resources there on the island, as did the president of, for now, deceased brother, Hugo Chavez, did the same thing in Venezuela, and that angered the United States. And so we see the same type of colonial relationship there, at least seeking to control Cuba in some type of way, and it all backfires on the United States. While the United States actively works to keep Cuba in a poverty state, in, which is really inhuman, preventing even medicine to enter the island, I want to read this report. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce estimates that the embargo costs the U.S. economy $1.2 billion a year in lost sales and exports, while the Cuban government estimates that the embargo only costs the island itself $685 million annually. The United States has spent over $500 million in broadcasting Radio Martí and TV Martí, even though the transmission signals of the latter are effectively blocked by the Cuban government. Those radio stations and TV stations are propaganda techniques to try to get the Cuban people to rebel against the government, but it's all backfired because the government has now provided a new type of education for the people that is service-oriented. And no matter what kind of condition the island is in, the people are now programmed into a new mind state, and that is really to serve the peoples of the world.
Beautiful, beautiful. Okay. Sister Yunasta?
Yes.
Can I ask you a question? I was in New Mexico in Albuquerque in 2007, and it seemed to be a slight civil war of division between indigenous Native American brothers and Mexican Americans. They were fighting terribly in 2007. I haven't been back there since then. Can you talk to us about the divisions that may be taking place among our brothers and sisters, and what can be done to help to bring about a dialogue of atonement for that?
You know, that's a good question. I haven't seen that when I was in Albuquerque, but I can understand where that root comes from. It's kind of like light skin versus dark skin, you know, south side versus west side in Chicago, or you know, things that happen to like I'm different and you're not, and I'm original and you're a copycat type of mentality. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona, and I would see, like, for instance, Navajos will constantly say, "I'm not Asian," because a lot of Navajos look Asian.
Right.
But they're like, you know, "I'm not Asian." So, you know, so even with Mexican Americans as well as with the Native Americans, you know, they're like, "No, I'm not Mexican. I'm Native American." And so that type of ignorance level can elevate and escalate to the level of what you saw in 2007. Okay. I think that it all boils down to lack of knowledge. So it boils down to lack of knowledge of self. And once we're able, I mean, the best teacher is the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, in teaching us knowledge of self. So I believe that, you know, and I love the Millions More Movement concept. How the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan was able to use the Millions More Movement as a way to bring Islam into people of all nations. That really, that's how I looked at the Millions More Movement. It was a strategic way to bring Islam and the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad to to original people, to people of color, you know, all around the world. And so I think that if we are able to have to use and to live and act like the way the minister, the way that he handles people from all over the world, and the way that he's able to go into any community all over the world and be able to speak to them in a way that they feel it, know it, and want to live it. And if we are able to adopt that way of doing, and when we go into these other communities, then we're able to, because the number one thing is truth. And
right.
if we're able to bring truth, and which is knowledge of self, then every truth, I mean, every war, everything will be able to come to amends. So I feel that we need to do that. We need to get to that level of speaking truth. And truth in a way of having knowledge of self. And the way that you could do that is also understanding the culture of the neighborhoods and the people you speak to. When I took, because I know everybody that's on this panel, I want to give a greetings to everyone on this panel because they're my brothers and my sisters and I love them to death. But I'm hearing everyone speak, and I've worked with everyone either you know personally or professionally. But I do want to say this is that when I took a group of people to res tours. I started doing this thing called res tours where I take people to Native American communities. And the last one I did was 2 years ago, or it was last year, as a matter of fact, last August. I took everyone to the Navajo Nation. And a lot of the people that bought the package were in the Nation of Islam. We did have a philosopher, a historian, but most of them were in the Nation of Islam. And as we was going, they saw the teachings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad in everything that they experienced, all the way down to the clothing, all the way down to the places that we went, the history of the Navajo people, the history of the Anasazis, the history. They was like, oh, my God. This is what Master Farad Muhammad was teaching us, and I wrote a letter to the minister about 6 months ago, and I said to him, I said, what better religious sector than the Nation of Islam? Not just you know any like not just the Sunnis and all, but the Nation of Islam. To embrace Native Americans as one, than the Nation of Islam, because, and I told him, I said, because the all the places I have traveled, I always see the Nation of Islam teachings in every tribe that I visited, and now I read the Quran, I read the Bible, but it's the teachings of the Nation of Islam that I see most of that close relationship. And so, and even the student ministers that I took along with me that have met with chiefs, they have met with medicine men. They sat there, you know, talking and conversating, saying, "Oh, that's what we do in the Nation of Islam," and the chief or the medicine man was like, "Well, that's what we do in the Shinnecock Nation, or that's what we do in this, you know, in this tribe, and this, you know." So it's such a beauty that we in the Nation of Islam has the upper hand advantage of bridging ourselves with Native Americans and indigenous people all over the world. And indigenous means original. So
right.
That is our Latinos, our Native Americans, and our black people all around the world.
Beautiful, sister. Beautiful. You know, the minister said he prayed to Allah to help him loose the knot in the language of Master Farad Muhammad, because the first language was a nationalistic language, and he said that he asked Allah to expand his breast so that all could encompass the teachings, and we're seeing manifestations of that on this panel tonight. Brother David, what say you, sir? Same thing applies, some of the differences, and what can be done to bring about a healing to bring it together?
Well, you know, some of the differences, we can say this. We all are suffering from the same sickness, which is white supremacy and a disconnect. Really, the biggest sickness is the disconnect from God. But the most acute of those who are sick with this is the black man and woman of North America. And, you know, that's that being recognized, that's why I came to the hospital, which is the Nation of Islam. And the main things that I see that is that are similarities, obviously we share history. Puerto Rico was an island that had a large population of enslaved Africans brought to it that has a strong presence as well of that African ancestry, as well as the Boricua people or of Boriquen, which is what it was called, the indigenous people of that island. And so we have that mixture as well. We have that cultural influence as well. But the similarities, they're not so much in what we suffer together, but in our origin together. Just as Sister Yanazdaha mentioned, that we are the original people of the planet, and we're actually kin to one another. And many of the what the white man would call myths, but we know that they're rooted in the oral traditions of our people passing down the histories, they bear witness to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad teaches in terms of the deportation of the moon, the origin of the Caucasian people, the ultimate unification of the original people. All of that, there are signs of that. And even in our histories, I'm thinking in one instance, there was a massacre in Puerto Rico in the early 30s when the independence movement picked up the end of slavery as a national holiday for their cause. And it was called the Ponce Massacre in Ponce, Puerto Rico. The police slaughtered 19 nationalists. Check the number out. All right? And then you have other things in there. And I was just listening to the minister talk on this past Saturday about how Kwame Ture was poisoned with cancer. Well, the leader of that movement in Puerto Rico was poisoned with cancer. So we have all of those things in common, but we're the same people in essence. And the enemy has sought to make us think that we're different. So at this moment in history, we would not come to realize and see each other for who we really are. But of course, he's already lost. Allah has made us the victors, and all we have to do is accept our own and be ourselves.
Yes, sir. Sister Queen Aziza, same thing, ma'am. The differences, and what can we do to bring about the unity?
Well, I don't want to reiterate what I said, but, you know, I think it's education. And I also believe in forums. You know, I think we should get community leaders together from all backgrounds, cultures, and faiths, and have town hall meetings to address the issues that plague our communities. And as we gather in that type of setting and have those people come from those backgrounds and come together, I think the commonalities will become more visible to everyone else. And then, you know, set forth a plan to unify for the good of the whole, you know, because we all have to heal. We all have to become independent and separated from this current government. And it's a process that is going to take a long time, and it's going to take us pulling together. And that unity is something that we're not used to. So somebody has to lay the foundation. So I would gather the leaders from all of those cultures, and I would ask them to conduct a town hall meeting and to just, you know, just lay out the issues and see all the things that we have in common, and just embrace one another and encourage us to embrace one another and examine one another's culture and just have a display of all of the different things that we have to offer and let them have that experience so they can really feel that we are more the same than we are different.
Beautiful, sis. Brother Abel, sir, is Brother Abel still on the line or did he get dropped?
He got dropped.
Can you hear me? I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Okay. I can see. Brother Abel, this is for you and Brother Tony. I'm going to start with you, Brother Abel. I have a constitution here that many would like to know about. This seems to be a good platform to talk about it at the Farrakhan Roundtable Talk tonight. Point number 12 in our constitution of what the Muslims believe by the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad states, we believe that Allah God appeared in the person of W. Farad Muhammad, July 1930, the long-awaited Messiah of the Christians and the Mahdi of the Muslims. We believe further and lastly that Allah is God, and besides him there is no God, and he will bring about a universal government of peace wherein we all can live in peace together. What say you, sir? Can you break down this constitutional point of what the Muslims believe?
Well, just in brief, brother, I mean, I think the fact that that is the controversial point of all the points that we have is that point number 12. And the fact that, as you mentioned, it constitutes our formation as a nation. And it really is the beginning of the ushering in of the kingdom of God. We believe, and that second paragraph is key. Further and lastly, that Allah is God, and besides him there is no God, and he will bring about a universal government of peace wherein we all can live in peace together. That means every nation, every tribe, every so-called religion, all who want to be at peace, all who are seeking that thing called hereafter, paradise, heaven, if you will, the kingdom of God, we have access to it now. And to me, this point is our, as a nation, and I'm speaking now of the nation of Islam here in the West, this is the point that many differ with us on, but it is the point that we cannot remove from the back page, and that is really going to be the point that drives us to the forefront, because it's a point of unity. It's not mm-hmm. that all have to believe what we believe, but we who believe this must now then act on this word. And that action is exemplified in a man who's amongst us, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And I would like to make this point, if I could, dear brother.
Yes, sir, please.
You know, I've seen him convert people who don't speak a word of the language that he speaks. I've seen him speak to people from origins in Italy, origin in Spain, origin in these other parts of the world, and showing the highest of civilization, what he does is begin to teach those individuals about where they're from. So he's constantly giving to every human being a deeper and more profound knowledge of ourselves, because that's the right of every human being. And if we're truly going to have a universal government of peace wherein we all can live in peace together, well, we can't have peace without truth. And that truth comes from real knowledge, not hiding what happened, but bringing it all out on the table so that we can know exactly who we are. Particularly myself, coming from the Mexican people, I have European blood in me, as most Mexicans do. I have black blood in me from the so-called slaves of Africa that were brought, the black people brought to this hemisphere. That's in our lineage, too, as well as the lineage of the indigenous people of the Western Hemisphere. So most of us as Mexicans and Latinos have a tremendous identity issue, especially when we come to the United States, because we don't look like Caucasian people. But they're mixed in us. We don't look like black people, but they're mixed in us. We're rejected by some indigenous people, but they're mixed in us. Yet we have all of the people in us, and we're in a position to make balance with that, make peace with that. But we can't make peace with ourselves because we've been lied to about by our white people. We've been lied to about our black origin. We've been deprived of the knowledge of the greatness of our indigenous selves, and that's why point number 12 is so critical, because finally God himself has come to set the record straight so that we can be at peace, our people can be at peace, and we can accept and be the truth of what God intended for us to be, which is not some worker, not just some immigrant, not some cheap citizen of a landmass, but we are to be the vicegerents of God on the earth, but we can't do that without the proper knowledge, and it won't come from the leaders that are raised up in this world. It won't come from the religions in this world. It has to come from God. That's why that point to me is so perfect, because it constitutes for us our new beginning, our true beginning, for the first time being introduced to who we really are. We're not Mexicans, we're not Indians, we're not Africans, we're not Caucasians or Europeans or Spaniards or Italians just because some of their blood so-called is in us. No, our origin comes directly from God, and that's how we must define ourselves, by the attributes and characteristics of God. And if we accept those attributes and carry out those characteristics, then there would be peace, and we would be the cornerstone, and we are the cornerstone of this universal government of peace, which has already begun. That's why we see the old world going down and out.
Thank you, sir. Brother Tony, what say you? Do you see this point number 12 as an apex into creating the unity through diversity?
Absolutely, dear brother. This is such a heavy topic. The
yes,
Honorable
sir.
Elijah Muhammad said himself that he did not come to raise a nation of followers, but he came to raise a nation of gods. Well, why did the Honorable Elijah Muhammad say that? Well, he allowed himself to take on the mind of Master Farad Muhammad himself, which is the mind of God. And in essence, he reproduced himself into the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. So aligning our minds universally with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan today is key. What is he teaching us? The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said in, I believe, two programs ago, in The Time and What Must Be Done, that the most profound six words that Master Farad Muhammad said to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad was, accept your own and be yourself. What is our own? A righteous Muslim. What is a Muslim? One who submits completely to the will of God. When we submit ourselves completely to the will of God, we are in essence aligning our very mind with the mind of God. This is a methodological process through which the people themselves become divine beings and now are in a position where we can establish the kingdom of heaven in every nook and cranny on the face of the planet Earth. The Honorable Elijah Muhammad himself said that in the hereafter, all places would become holy. Well, certainly we're not just corresponding to North America. If we see the travels of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he's giving us a sign that he is indeed the expansion of the breast, as referenced in the Holy Quran. He is that Aaron, and of course his father being Moses. Expansion of the breast, what comes to mind is the heart, because that is what you find in the breast. He is the embodiment of love from Almighty God Allah. Now going into the Caribbean, going into Central America and South America, and teaching our people everywhere. What is he teaching? The same methodological process of taking ownership of everything in the material universe, what we see and what we don't see, from our very bodies when it comes down to our diets, all the way down to taking command of the natural resources of our environment that give life to us and are enabling us to become a free and independent people no matter where we are. And what he is preaching everywhere that he goes is the unity of our people, whether it be here in North America or in the Caribbean, as he has taught the people in the Caribbean that no island could stand on its own. He's teaching unity among our people everywhere, because it is through our unity that we would become a very powerful people, much more powerful than what this enemy is presently in the world today.
Beautiful. Thank you, Brother Tony. Sister Yunasta, I have another question here for you.
Yes,
sir. Okay, let me ask this way. Over 70%, I think it's close to almost 75% of blacks born who have descendants from slavery have indigenous Native American blood. A lot of us don't recognize it, but a lot of us have it. It's a twofold question. What do you see the black Indians, their part in this, with the Native American Indians? Do you see a marriage taking place where a lot of the black Indians are being accepted among the Choctaws or the Cherokees or Navajos or any of the other Indian nations? Do you see the black Indians, their role and their place right now, or is there a problem and a division there as well?
And I believe it's starting to become a lot more accepted than it was in the past, because once again, you know, Native Americans have been Willie lynched, and in that Willie Lynch syndrome with Native Americans was also not accepting those that were darker. A lot of times, too, that even some of the Native Americans that were very dark, like my Aunt Wilma in South Dakota, her and I are like the same color. And growing up, they did not accept her.
Right.
A lot of times, you know, they would call her the N-word and things like that. And these were also family members, even as well as myself. Being raised both black and Native American and by my mother and being, she did a phenomenal job of teaching me my history on both sides and my culture on both sides. But the thing is that I believe that it's becoming accepted now. Recently, there is a Native American sister she is Navajo and African American, and she was nominated for a Grammy.
Okay.
We also have, I forgot her name, she's going to kill me too, but she was nominated for a Grammy. She was also former Miss Navajo, and she's a phenomenal singer. A lot of times when she was voted as Miss Navajo, that right there in the Navajo Nation was like, it was a historic move, but also it was a move of acceptance, because so many, there are a lot of Natives that have black in them. Either through marriage or just through the acceptance of many Native Americans that took in African slaves a long time ago. So the term Black Indians, it is a term that is used, but I personally never liked it, because I feel that we're all black and I feel that we're all indigenous. So,
right.
But it is a term that is used now in the Cherokee Nation. The reason for that, I know you all have read my articles in the Final Call when I talked about the Cherokee Nation was voting out the freedmen and the black Cherokees and all of that. And it's
That's still right. An
ongoing fight down there. But the fight is not by Cherokee, 100% full-blood Cherokee people. These are 7% Cherokee-blooded people that are fighting them, fighting the blacks, because of the fact that it's a money situation. They want the money. They want the less members in a tribe, the more money that one tribal member can receive. So if you start accepting all of these people that have Native blood in them, then you know that's more enrolled members that's going to receive more money. I mean, you know, they're going to receive money, and that's less money for each individual member. So it really wasn't the fact of it being, oh, we're not accepting black people or things like that. It was more so of it was a money situation, because the Cherokee Nation is one of the wealthiest tribes, especially in Oklahoma. They have a
right.
huge casinos, and I mean, if we look at the
land.
History of Oklahoma, that is where Black Wall Street developed. But Black Wall Street was Native American. Basically, they were the so-called Black Indians. That's what Black Wall Street was. They were Native Americans and African Americans, former freedmen slaves, you know, that came together and said, you know what, this is what we should do with sovereign land. And I believe, and before I go on and transition to the spirit world, my number one goal is to develop another Black Wall Street. And because it can be possible, there it's not accident of why I was raised in the Nation of Islam. It's not by accident why the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught us to do for self. And it's not by accident why in our lessons it says that the original people of the Western Hemisphere is the 2 million with the 17 million. You know, it's that word with. It's not by accident. So for us to have all this knowledge, we need to begin to start applying it with Native American brothers and sisters and develop another Black Wall Street. I posted on Facebook today. I said, how many people want to help me purchase 50 acres of land on sovereign land? I have the access to do it. If everybody, the Honorable Minister Farrakhan on Savings Day talked about how to be able to save money with 5 cents. Well, I have access to land, but believe me, I have asked many people. Nobody is not willing to even assist. So even if I do things like, you know, selling T-shirts or selling CDs, something to be able to start developing a fund in order to purchase land. Because let me tell everyone that's listening right now, when I purchase land in South Dakota, I am making it open and available to indigenous people all over the world that's ready to be free and free of the white man's ways and government.
Go ahead. Go ahead, sis. Praise be to Allah. You know, I've never seen nowhere like I've seen among our indigenous native brothers and sisters where blood really matters. I mean, they count it down to the quarter, to the half, the whole nine. I mean, when I was over in Fort Defiance and dealing with the Navajos, that was one of the ways that the only way that you can be a part of the reservation is if you did the blood work so they could find out just how much blood you had. I mean, it really was amazing to me to
see. Because the fact that they have been enslaved. They have been enslaved in the way of, you know, you have to, like I said, Willie Lynch has happened everywhere. That Willie Lynch syndrome everywhere. And until we are able to develop knowledge of self and teach one another, each other, of the commonality, like Trista Aziza said earlier, we need to talk about our commonality, not our differences, but our commonality. Once we're able to get to that level of what we have in common, and you know what? Oh, yeah, you've been mutilated. You've been pillaged by the same white man that we've been pillaged by. Oh, yeah, then we know what? Automatically, we should already have it within our blood that we brothers and sisters. You know, because our enemy is the same. The enemy is the same enemy. So we have to elevate our level of looking at each other as dark skin, light skin, green, yellow, red, black, all that other stuff, because we're all dealing with the same exact enemy. And the thing is that the wonderful, beautiful part is that we all have the resources amongst each other to be able to be free. We have the resources amongst each other to be free. So we have to be able to, you know, I mean, it's been, I mean, Brother Abel, you and I, we've been on this work for about 10 years, and we still have not yet got a piece of land amongst ourselves within the people that we have ministered and spoken to, you know, and it's not even 1 acre of land to say, you know what, you know, you got $50, I got $50. I apologize, my one-year-old is crying.
That's
all
right.
You know, I'm also a mother, so I manage it all. But but you know, we have to get to that level of being able to. I'm just tired of talking. I'm more so about, you know what, let's go ahead and, you know, let's buy land. Let's buy land. I have access to land. I have access to land, and let's go ahead and purchase it. I go to South Dakota all the time, and I'm all constantly looking at land. I go to the Navajo Nation. I'm constantly looking at the price of land and,
wow,
and what can be made and built upon it. We talk about it, but let's start being about it. And that right there is going to be, you know, when I took some a delegation with me to Pine Ridge, South Dakota. I took a delegation with me to Pine Ridge, South Dakota, and we had some auditors with us, and I had a sister audit my one of my family members, and she works in the healthcare system in South Dakota, and she was just like, wow, we need to bring this type of science amongst, you know, the tribe, especially the fact of suicide and drug and alcohol abuse. You know, because they too have been, you know, are dealing with over 400, 500, 700 years of mental slavery. You know, so these type of things, but we have to be on the land and living amongst each other in order for us to really build. But a lot of times, you know, a lot of people are not ready to go camping. You know, the white man has taught us to be scared of the forest because of Jason. because the black man's the first one to get killed. So we're like, oh no, we ain't going to the forest. I ain't driving. Where are we driving to? We're going to too far. You know, you've been in the car with one of your family members, and you drive. They're like, where are we going? Hold on. I see woods. I'm not driving that far. You know, we need to get out of that because Allah said that this earth is yours, not Martin Luther King Boulevard. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not states within housing projects in New York. Not Harlem is yours. No, Allah said earth is yours. So if we call each other gods, then we need to know that we are God over everything. So we could go into the forest. We could go into the mountains. We could go anywhere, and it's ours. And we have to develop that mentality in order for us to be free. We have to free within ourselves. I could go on and on and on about it, but I'm hyped. I'm also, you know,
ready to get to work.
It's time. We got to get this work.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like young people saying, you're gonna get this work. We got to get this work.
That's right. That's beautiful, Brother David, sir.
Yes, sir.
Let me come to this point again. We believe that Allah, God, appeared in the person of Master W. Farad Muhammad, July 1930, the long-awaited Messiah of the Christians and the Mahdi of the Muslims. We believe further and lastly that Allah is God, and besides him there is no God, and he will bring about a universal government of peace wherein we all can live in peace together. What say you, beloved, to how this method of what we're talking about with this Constitution, how do we take this message and to begin a process of reform in Puerto Rico?
Well, let me say this to the point that you raised about Master Farad Muhammad. I can't speak necessarily for Puerto Rico, although I've been doing it somewhat on the show. I'm speaking as one who's inside the belly of the beast.
Okay.
And we thought Master Farad Muhammad went all across the world before he came to Detroit, Michigan, and he dealt with all of the diversity on the earth, all right? And wherever he went, as it says in the book of Habakkuk, that the burning coals went forth at his feet, and so you see revolution coming up. I actually have been looking at some of the history with regards to Master Farad Muhammad and the so-called Latinos in the Nation of Islam, and there's reports that he was in Mexico at the time preceding the Mexican Revolution. And so when you see the rise of the indigenous people, when you see the rise of a consciousness amongst the black and the so-called Latino, you have to ask yourself what happened in the 20th century that woke up this sleeping giant. And it is the presence of a knowledge, but it is also the presence of the best knower. And when he came into America, the black man of America, in their struggle, because they were in the most acute condition and still are, they become the beacon light for all oppressed people. It is actually through the enslavement of the black men here in North America that it leads to the domination of the entire planet and the darker peoples of the planet. And so when it says that God chose a people out of the furnace of affliction, it just goes right to that point of Master Farah Muhammad's choice of this people to be the cornerstone, but he didn't just choose them and leave out their family. And so he also chose their family to go on a journey with them. And so when Sister Nazdaha spoke about with the 2 million Indians, it is through our unity that we will truly become free. So the point that she's making about the need for unity and the sovereign land that comes with that, see, our people, because we were not in such of a bad shape as the black people here in this country, some of these things come faster to us, but we need each other. And us joining together will actually expedite our liberation. And so the enemy knows this, and they're doing all they can to keep us divided from that. But the knowledge base that Master Farah Muhammad brought and gave to the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and that teaching that is represented by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, is the glue. It is that which bonds us. It's that which weds us together, because it ties us to the originator of the heavens and the earth. And I'll close on this point. In the problem book, in the second problem, when it talks about the wife of the uncle of W.D. Farad, about how she had pain in all her joints, and then you see all of the vital signs measured, and she suffers from rheumatism and high blood pressure, the same kind of medical conditions that the black, the brown, the red suffer from. But she has pain in all her joints, and she can't walk up to the store. We were taught that the store is that we were going up to get that knowledge, but the joints, that's us coming together, and it's painful. Unity is painful. And for our people, we're not necessarily an oral people like black people here in that sense that we hear a preacher and then we get up. We're looking because we see that black people in America have been blessed with the best, and we're gauging how responsive they are, and we're timing our response off on that. But now that's being whipped up by the great judgments that Allah is putting on America, the rain, hail, the snow, and the earthquake. And it is going to be this that forces us to come together, even as painful as it might be because of what's been done to us and what we have to suffer through to get there. But it's going to be that unity that ultimately leads us to freedom, justice, and equality.
Beautiful, sir. Sister Queen Aziza, did she drop off?
Sorry.
Oh, there she go. That's all right. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is attempting to acquire. He is asking us to help support to get 100 million acres. He said that would it take to feed our people. What do you see in this 100 million acres? Do you think that this could be the beginning of a spark of an alliance to bring our people together, or what say you?
Well, I think, number one, it's a means of survival, and I think that as Minister Farrakhan continues his 52-week series, that, you know, things are happening so fast before he can get it out of his mouth, we're able to bear witness to what he's saying. So, inevitably, you know, as people hear and as they heed to the call, I think that is going to bring us closer together and start, you know, if it's even on a large scale or whether it's small clusters of people getting together to buy this land. And, you know, we are so scattered all over the place. And so I know that the minister, and I'm sorry I don't have the list, he did list some states of land that we needed to buy. And I know he mentioned Florida, and I think he mentioned Detroit. But, you know, it's about us really coming together and taking that message and taking the time seriously. But as things go on, you know, I think, yes, Brother Jihad, we're going to come together and we're going to get that land, because we're not going to have any choice. You know, we're not going to have any jobs. We're not going to have many means of survival that we are so-called used to now. So we're going to have to revert back to the earth, and we're going to have to revert back to our culture to survive. So it may be a struggle for some, and then for those of us who have been listening, I think we'll be more prepared. So, you know, those of us who are fortunate to have these teaching and have this knowledge, wisdom, understanding, and faith, you know, I think that's why the minister is telling us to use our media to get the message out, you know, to constantly be doing that, to constantly be found engaging in what he is telling us, because it is a life-saving message, but people are not taking the urgency seriously. But I think this summer will, you know, really show the big picture and really bring into fruition what the minister is talking about, because even right here in Texas where I am, you know, we're already at a water deficit, and, you know, we haven't had temperatures over 85 degrees yet. So there are a lot of things that are going to take place that are going to force us in that direction to unify, to come together, to pool our human as well as our financial resources to obtain land before they run us off of land, and then, you know, do what we have to do as a people.
Beautiful. Brother Abel, sir?
Yes, sir, dear brother.
This brings me right into this, to the series of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He said on the time and what must be done, he said America will not let the black man go, that America will fight God to the end. What say you, sir?
Well, you know, it has already been shown that that is the case. That's why God had to come himself to contend with them over us. And we know who the winner is already. And so then it is us who are the prize, if you will, the reward that God is seeking, not in terms of some sort of gratification for himself in a low sense, but in the sense of that he has claimed us as his, and he wants us to know his power. And it is our slowness in disuniting from Pharaoh, from this world and its ways, that is bringing on us some of the taste of the judgment, some of the fiery serpents, because there are some of us who murmur against what the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is saying to us. If God has come to claim us, why would we want to hold back on to that enemy that doesn't want to let us go to God? There's something wrong that doesn't allow us to unite as we should. There's something wrong when it's our nature to obey God and to be with God. There's something natural about that, but something has now intervened in our nature, if you will, inserted itself as a stumble for us, where it is now becoming difficult. So when we go out and speak with our people and tell them a nickel a day, you know, 35 cents a week, if that is a stumbling block, then there's something wrong where they can't see the benefit of doing for self and how that would get us the blessings of God. So what we see happening now is the great deception, as it's written in the book of Revelation, that the wicked serpent that became a great dragon that would deceive the whole earth, the whole world, if you will. That is happening now, and we are those who have been deceived. We think that our friend is our enemy, and we take our enemy as a friend. And we are not listening to a man in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, who's worked on our behalf for over 50 years now, working to just get us to let go of this world's ways, and we can't seem to find a way to let go because we're still so enwrapped in the enemy's way of life, so we must be retrained and re-educated. That's why what we have been given by Master Farad Muhammad is so vital. It's vital to black. It's vital to the native people. It's vital to the so-called Latinos. It's vital to the people in the Caribbean, because we're all under that deception, which comes in the form of miseducation and lies given to us by the enemy, and the only way out is that that be replaced with true knowledge and a new way of life that God himself has come to give to us, but we are now wrestling with ourselves and trying to overcome 5 centuries of being conditioned to hate ourselves and to reject everything from ourselves. But we see that. Look at, listen just to this conversation tonight, brothers and sisters. We're talking Black and Indian, Black and Mexican, Puerto Rican and Black, Puerto Rican and Indian, Cuban and Black, African and Cuban. We're bringing them back together as we were in the beginning. 50 years ago, this could not have happened. But it's happening today because they won't let us go, but God has already come and has introduced something new that is a healing which will allow us to come together. Now what we must do, and I have to echo Sister Yonashta's sentiment as well as Sister Queen, we have to begin to now act on that word and not simply quote the word or study the word. Yes, we must study. Yes, we must recite it. But ultimately, the greatest quote, the greatest recitation is our activity. And our activity in unity is the spark that will turn on our people's actions and movement. It's not our words. It's our word in action. And that's what we see in the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. He's a man of action. Yes, he speaks and teaches, and then he backs up the speaking and teaching with his actions. And that's where we must catch up. We must show our people, we must show them a better way. If it's just my house and nobody else on my block who wants to do better, then let my house be the torchlight in the darkness. Let it be the candle lit in the abyss of darkness. If there's nobody else in my community, let it start here, because as the hour gets darker and darker, even a little candle looks really bright the darker it gets outside. So let's not get weary, but let's keep bonding with one another, building with one another, and let our word be bond. Let our word be an action so that our people can look at it. And even though Satan won't let us go, our unity, backed by the will of God and in obedience to the will of God, is what will be the severance or the breaking of us from this enemy. But we must do it and claim it for ourselves.
Praise be to Allah. And to show you the difficulty factor in this, Brother Tony, in part 4 in the series of the time and what must be done, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he said that since the Caucasian was let loose for the last 4,000 years, they have killed 100 million people for every 1,000 years of their existence on our planet, which means 600 million people have been killed under the rule of Satan. What say you, sir? Is Brother Tony still on the line?
I'm right here. Do you hear me?
did you hear the statement from the Muhammad?
I heard the question loud and clear.
Yes, sir. What say you, beloved?
Yes, sir. Wow. What comes to mind, dear brother, is wherever we find the mind of the enemy, the mind of Satan, among our people, we see our people suffering. And these same conditions of murder taking place everywhere, from the tip of Chile in South America, all the way up north to Alaska, among the indigenous people who are known as Eskimos. We are suffering from this condition under their subjugation, everywhere that you find us. And it begins with we ourselves in our own communities. We are the number one inflictors of violence among ourselves. Why? Because we have taken on the mindset of the enemy. In fact, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in How to Eat to Live, I don't have it right in front of me, but he makes reference to as we are subjugated to this way of life, the way that we live our lives, subjugated to it, becomes 7 times worse than the Caucasian. And so we become the number one murderers of our people. We become the number one drug dealers among our people. We become the number one destroyers among our people. Why? Because we have taken on the mindset of the enemy. And you find this in every facet of society. In taking on the habits of the enemy, we are of all extremes. You know, I made reference to about this in a previous program, but among blacks and so-called Latinos and Native American people, we don't just get high, we get messed up. We don't smoke a joint, we smoke a big fat blunt. We don't take little sips of alcohol in order to get a buzz. We are of all extremes. We want to get pissed drunk. And we take on all these habits. We are the first ones to get in each other's face and not recognize one another as brothers and sisters. We are the first ones to take on this type of mentality. First ones to inflict harm on our brothers and sisters through sexual abuse, because we don't know ourselves, dear brother. And when we do not know ourselves, this is how we behave. When we hate ourselves, we take it on against our brother or sister who looks most similar to us. We find this among all of our people. We hate those that look closest to us the most, because we're trying to get away from that as much possible. If we take a look at the way that we behave internationally in relation to the cancer of white supremacy, we will see so many similarities. And as a result of that, because we do not know ourselves, now we start identifying our common suffering. But we see that God, coming in the person of Master Farah Muhammad, in his purpose in raising the Honorable Elijah Muhammad from amongst us to be a shining example of the new reality, when we take special care of our brothers and sisters, no matter what language they may speak or what culture they may come from, now with the purpose and intent of raising and uplifting them out of the condition so that they may know God. And the Honorable Elijah Muhammad himself said that every time that you look at a black man or black woman, you are looking at God. When we look at our brothers and sisters in the street, do we ourselves really ask ourselves the question, am I really looking at God? You know, many of us that are studying these teachings, it's very hard many a times when we see our brothers and sisters inflicting so much harm towards themselves and towards each other. But in order to be effective in this work, Brother Jihad, we have to put on the lenses of God, because it is by doing that that we are able to approach our people in the right way and appeal to that dormant God that lies within.
Beautiful. Brother David, sir, is
yes,
he still
sir.
There?
Yes, sir, I'm here.
Is it possible right now, today, to form an alliance with the black indigenous and further that alliance with the Caribbean, Central, and South America? If it is possible, what would be the challenges for such an alliance?
Oh, that's a profound question. It is possible, and that is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught would happen. He said that there were 10 nations in Latin America that would accept the gifts of North America, but then turn their back on America. Now, if they're turning their back on America, who are they turning towards? When the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan that one day a great nation will come out of the Caribbean, and you study the moves that the minister's making there, he's unifying the Caribbean, which is in the shape of a crescent. So we see that area of the world turning towards each other in a look for mutual assistance and in the efforts to build infrastructure in Central and South America, as well as the Caribbean. Now, for us in America, it's really, you know, we have to really get busy, as Sister Yanazdaha mentioned, as Sister Queen mentioned, because it's not what we say, it's what we do in this hour, and it's going to be that demonstration of our work effort that puts us in the position to step into the reality of unity. It starts with the work, brother.
Yes,
for
sir.
Our people, we have to come into the knowledge of self. God is not going to wait on mentally dead people to decide when they want to do it, we are being whooped into that mode of having to do for self or suffer the consequences. And for those of us from the Latino side of things, and we use that term so our people understand who we're talking about, we need the knowledge of self, and it is what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said would lift us out of spiritual ignorance and poverty. And it is that teaching that is now beginning to reach our people in greater numbers through the aid of modern technology, through the representation with brothers like Brother Abel, Brother Tony, and through a better explanation of the teachings. You started the show talking about how, you know, when many of us came in this, it was black and black was narrow. Now, Elijah Muhammad was not a black nationalist, but the language became classified as nationalistic. He always taught that black was universal. And in the teachings is the unifying language that everyone can find their vine and their branch to come in under this family and this banner of freedom, justice, and equality.
Beautiful. Thank you, sir. Sister Queen Aziza, if
I'm here.
Can you give us a talking point on the time and what must be done that sticks out at you at this time?
Woo! Wow. Well, we've had 14 of them.
That's right. We got 14 so far.
You know, I really can't, Brother Jahad, but if I had to summarize what the minister has said from 1 through 14, I would say, you know, the warning. I would say the final call. I would say how we are accessing and using media, how we need to get this message to our people. Because, you know, it's okay for us to come together and dialogue. Those of us who are conscious, claim to be conscious, those of us who are in the know. But, you know, the minister is almost pleading with us as a people to turn our behavior around, to rid ourselves of the devil that have conformed to just from being exposed and being oppressed by Satan. So, you know, everything and all our efforts are for naught if we do not get our people. So the most profound thing that he has said and continues to say, not only on the weekly series but also on Twitter, is to really get the message out, because there are so many people who are entertained by so many other aspects of media that a lot of people are not hearing Minister Farrakhan. And so our first obligation to our people is to educate and provide them with information. So if I had to pick one thing or summarize it all, that would be the key factor in my opinion.
Praise be to Allah. Thank you, beloved. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Sister Yanasta, is she still there?
Yes, I'm still here. I apologize. I had the phone off mute.
Okay, that's okay. This is my final question for you, beloved. You talked about purchasing land.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know of our indigenous brothers and sisters on the reservations, the council? Are they ready? Do you think that the Indian Nation of North America is ready to form an alliance with our indigenous brothers and sisters from all over this part of North America?
Yes, and I thank Allah for the foundation that my mother, Juanetta Lone Wolf, put in prior to years ago in the 80s,
yes,
with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, as well as
right,
with Honorable Minister Farrakhan, was setting that foundation of bridging the families,
And I want to say, sister, I want to say, sister, I stand on that foundation as well. She is one of the founds, one of the pillars that helped to rebuild the Nation of Islam, and I would like to see her writings restored. Yes, ma'am, but go right ahead.
Yes, I would too. And you know, I try my best to in the final call to bring out old articles or things from her excerpts from her memoir that she left to me before she passed away. And I every once in a while I put in those excerpts of that to just kind of remind everyone and to also keep her legacy and her words alive. And
yes.
But I also, I thank Allah for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for giving me a position in the Nation of Islam to bridge the families of the indigenous communities with the Black community. And with that, I must say that as of 2013, the tribes that I have visited do want and cannot wait for Black brothers and sisters to come to Native American communities. And they're waiting, they're wanting to, because they're tired as well as for all the, you know, the handouts and not really getting anything. And they're in a mindset of doing for self. Minister Abel put me on to the, Minister Abel, what is the name of it? I talked about it on the last final call. I'm getting senile. The older I get, I feel like I am. But what minister? If you could unmute him, Senator Minister Abel, what was the name of that that protest?
Oh, the Idle No More.
Idle No More. So I wrote about. I don't know if it has been published yet, but I talked about the spirit of the warrior spirit that is happening all across indigenous communities. And how we just celebrated the anniversary of the American Indian Movement of Wounded Knee in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. You have the Idle No More protesting. So the young people of all the tribes, the spirit is do for self, warrior. We're about to take over type of, you know, and that is rightfully our spirit. And so, so with that, yes. They are ready. They're wanting us. When I took the delegation to Pine Ridge, South Dakota, they was like, "Come back and let's figure out a game plan." They said that their government and their economic development committee do not have the knowledge of how to do agriculture. They said their agriculture committee is very poor in knowledge. And as well as the health care, you know, all of these different things that we have been taught that we could be able to bring into Native American communities and develop an alliance. Cowboys did it. Why can't we do it? And
right.
And they're tired of the cowboys.
Beautiful.
And it's rightfully that time for us to do it and to go out there. We just have to. We have to get used to not, you know, we have to really get used to not having the convenience of the mall, the convenience of all the conveniences that we've been westernized with. We have to be able, you know, of being brainwashed with. We have to know that, you know, you're going out into the country and
right.
start getting used to sisters. You know, there's no weed stores. There's none. There's no barbershops, brothers. There's no salons. You know, you're going to have to. You know, get your feet dirty, but at the same token, the long term value of it is going to be great and beautiful because it's our land.
Beautiful, beautiful. Thank you, beloved, and I appreciate you taking your time out of your time, out of your schedule, to be with us tonight. And I thank you so much for being with us, beloved. Thank you so much,
brother.
Yes, ma'am. Brother Rafi, do we have any callers in queue? We want to give a 30-second sound blast for them. We don't have a lot of time to take a whole lot of questions and comments because we're running out of time. But we got 30 seconds to call. Who's in queue?
Oh, there's no one in queue at this moment, beloved.
Okay, there's no one in queue? Okay, all right. Brother Abel, can you come on and take us home? Give us a what stuck out at you with the time and what must be done out of 1 through 14 thus far, so far in the series.
Oh, brother, if I would have to, the one word that comes to mind with all 14 weeks of it, on top of the 50-plus years of his work, is love. It has been one of the most profound demonstrations of love I know that has ever been seen on social media. But I believe when you listen to what the minister is saying, how he's saying it, the events and circumstances, considering that all of these shows are pre-recorded at some point, most of the time 2 or 3 or 4 weeks in advance, and how when he speaks, it happens to be when he mentions Cuba that week, Cuba's in the news. When he says, look at the weather is the news. When he starts speaking about what's going on in the policies and the wicked policies of America's involvement and the false flag missions that have been set up to bring us into war, and God answers his words that same week with what he speaks about on the air, it really is something that we all have to sit and consider in a very, very, very personal way. And as Sister mentioned, it's something that we have to spread to our people, because the message is so clear, so important. We don't have to try to sell people on what he's going to say. We don't need a dollar. We don't need anything. We don't need you to get out of the comfort of your home. Just tune in and listen to a man who loves God and loves you. And we who love him are being taught in a very, very detailed way what love looks like, so that we may love one another as he has loved us. And to me, that has been, from week 1 through 14, the message that is always at the root of everything he's doing. It is love for God, love for the Messiah, and love for his people that is making him to say these things which we know trouble many and may trouble some of us, but that he must say and that we must wrestle with and understand that it's coming out of love, and then do with it what we must do to get out of the condition that we're in and the situations that we're in. So to me, dear brother, that's what it's been. And personally, I know I love the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan when this series started. But now I'm just in awe of how much he loves me and us, from what he's willing to go out on the line to say, and how he just pushes himself. And if I could say this, dear brother.
Yes, sir.
When he spoke 2 weeks ago on that Saturday night here in Chicago, and then had just come back from Alabama and from speaking at Tuskegee, and he had come back from filming more of these programs, and I saw him then speaking at a believer's meeting. I saw, for the first time, exhaustion on him. And I was reminded of the last personal conversation I was blessed to have with him, where he said these words, and I want you to think about it in light of everything else I just said. He said, I'm not doing enough. I need to do more. Now that's
wow.
Love that really just, what do you say about, after all he's done and is doing, to still say he has to do more, than us who love him? What should we be doing, and how should we measure ourselves so that we can, I mean, he's a man on a mission, and we have accepted to help him with that mission. I just pray that we can at least invite people to hear the words, which are, we know what they're doing for us. What could they do to the many millions and hundreds of millions of our people who are suffering on reservations, suffering in barrios and ghettos, suffering in their lives personally, economically, and socially with vices and whatnot? What could these words of guidance do for our people? It'll do the same thing for them that it's doing for us. So that love, I'm thankful to Allah for giving us that love in this dark hour.
Beautiful, beloved. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Brother Tony, you got 2 minutes, sir. What say you? We're getting ready to shut it down. I got a boots on the ground report before I close out. What say you, sir? You got 2 minutes.
Yes, sir. I have to concur with Brother Abel and everything that has been said by the beautiful testimony of Brother David and Sister Yanajda and Sister Aziza. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has his critics, but so did Noah, so did Lot, so did every prophet of God. He made reference to how many consider him to be a madman, you know, but how this puts him in good company, as it puts him in the company of the prophets who spoke truth to power. If I may read this surah from the Holy Quran, this is chapter 53, entitled An-Najm, the star. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. By the star when it sets, your companion errs not, nor does he deviate, nor does he speak out of desire. It is not but revelation that is revealed. When we take a look at the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, he is the shining example of what we should be, as he is the star. He is the shining light in our midst today that will get us out of the condition that we are in, no matter what culture we may be in. The further we delve into this American, Western, satanic culture that is being bred on the earth, which goes beyond America, but it begins in America. You know, we find many of our Latino, quote-unquote, people here that in the first generation they may start doing for self, but after we look at the second and third and fourth generation, they end up doing less for self. We find that also being among black people, as here in North America, over 100 years ago there was much more land owned by black people, but today black people own very little land. We have to ask ourselves why this is. It is all by design. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is exposing the truth and reality of the time that we are living in, and how the enemy is programming our minds to no longer do for self, no longer engage in self-preservation, but to work as slaves to preserve and to continue the existence of this reality that we are serving. But it is a limited reality, as a limited lifespan, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan wants us to begin practicing a life that is everlasting, which is the culture of God himself. And so, as Brother Abel mentioned himself, that it is out of pure love that the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan is conducting this lecture series. He is following the instructions of his teacher, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, in taking these teachings not just to every nook and cranny of North America, but to every nook and cranny of the planet Earth by way of this timely lecture series, The Time and What Must Be Done.
Thank you, sir. And I want to thank all our panels for coming out tonight. Brother David, you got about 30 seconds. Would you want to just talk to us from the heart?
And say,
talk
heart.
To the listeners for a minute. Yes, sir. Just give us something from your heart.
I mean, I can't follow that with anything but this statement. Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said that he is a guided missile. So for all of us that got knowledge of self, we don't have a right acting like loose cannons in this day, in this time, in this hour, when the minister is so on point and so on target. All of us should be right behind him, right in line with him, and backing him and defending him in the manner that he defends us.
Beautiful, brother. And that's the best closing remarks anyone can give. Thank you, Brother David. Brother Ron C., I got a boots on the ground report. The soldiers want to know what's going on for this week. We want to go down to Huntsville, Alabama, where the soldiers, the FOI of Huntsville, Alabama, are responding to the call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, distributing the final call. Let's move on to Pine Bluff, Arkansas. Yes, soldiers in Pine Bluff, Arkansas, and these soldiers got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers. Keep up the good work. Mobile, Alabama. That's right, Mobile. We got soldiers in Mobile, Alabama, and the soldiers in Mobile, Alabama got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers. Pensacola, Florida.
That's right, Pensacola. Soldiers in Pensacola. And the soldiers in Pensacola are responding to the call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as they go out to help our people with the final call news. Let's go East Coast, East Orange, New Jersey. Yes, soldiers in East Orange, New Jersey. And the soldiers in East Orange got their boots on the ground. This is a salute to the soldiers of the Fruit of His Arm who are responding to the call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and who got their boots on the ground. Let's go number five, Long Island, Strong Island, New York. The soldiers in Strong Island got their boots on the ground. Shout out, soldiers. Keep up the good work. Pittsburgh, PA. That's right, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Soldiers in Pittsburgh. And the soldiers are responding to the call of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Wilmington, Delaware. Shout out, soldiers. Keep up the good work in Wilmington, Delaware. Utica, New York. Mighty soldiers in Utica, New York. Keep up the good work, soldiers. But our number one this week goes to Mas 28, St. Louis, Missouri. The soldiers in St. Louis got their boots on the ground. They're fast moving, fast thinking, right down to the modern times, and they are consistent with the Final Call newspaper. Shout out, soldiers, and keep up the good work. All praise is due to Allah. Well, Brother Rafi, I think it's time now. We got to get up out of here. Let's ride, soldier. We want to thank all of our guests for being on the show tonight. Sister Yunasta Longworth, Sister Aziza, Queen Aziza Mariam Muhammad, and our brother student minister Abel Muhammad. Also, we want to give a shout and thank our brother David Muhammad for being with us tonight. It's the first time he's been on the show. Brother David, please come back, brother. We enjoyed your spirit and your company. A lot of wisdom you shared. And, of course, my brother, Brother Tony Muhammad down in Miami. Love you, soldier. Come back again, please. We won't be here next week, by God's grace. We got things going on next week. But we just want to say to you, don't forget, Saturday, tune in at 6 o'clock Central Time. The subject, the time and what must be done by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. The station, www.noi.org. Also, come back on Sunday and be with us on Sunday, the Nation of Islam webcast at 10 o'clock Central Time. Go to www.noi.org. On Twitter, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan said these words: "You have no power with falsehood to undermine the power of truth." Again, you have no power with falsehood to undermine the power of truth, end quote. To join the Nation of Islam and study and learn more from a Muslim study group in your area, just call the National Center of the Nation of Islam in Chicago, Illinois, at 773-324-6000. To purchase Final Call products, just go to www.store.finalcall.com. Or for immediate service, just call 1-866-602-1230, extension 322. We love you, dear Apostle. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. Original salute to our Supreme Captain Mustafa Farrakhan and the mighty E-Team for doing such a wonderful job in the security of our leader, teacher, and guide, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. We love you. May Allah bless us all to be safe and keep you as I leave you. Allahu Akbar. Assalamu alaikum.